It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
We're up there, and like, here are the people on the panel, so I'm like taking pot shots at Brian Brom. Because, like, that's what he came to Buffalo for.
It's Mike Shope.
You literally told EJ Manuel to his face that he sucked.
And the Bulldog.
I was proud of you. Because no.
I feel like that's what you're there for.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I know. I couldn't, though. No. I couldn't.
I'm better than you.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I don't know. Maybe I'm flustered. Maybe I'm too excited for tonight.
That can happen.
Two notebooks?
Oh, my. Are you using them properly? Or
I'm not using them at all yet.
Are you still doing this deeply psychotic one, like one side of a page and then using the backs all together?
There's no other option here for these notebooks. I've used the fronts of both all the way through. I'm definitely on the backs, but I carry two. I just don't need two. I made a note in my one here today that I got a draft in like an hour ago. We were here early for a meeting. And all right, well, Best Ball Mania is not filled almost. So I banged out a draft. You watched me. I know you were distracted. And I had to change my total number of drafts. I crossed out 292 and wrote 293. And I wrote, I feel like I'm like bowling a career game and another pin just barely tipped over.
I see.
Can you bowl a 293? How do you bowl a 293? Not a good time to ask?
I mean, if you want to just talk for a few minutes, I can call my dad. I don't suggest we do that live on the air.
Did you ever
I don't know.
Bowling math, like all the like front to back bowling math?
No, never.
Did you ever have to write it down?
Yes.
And figure out the math with a pencil?
Yes.
The show has never sounded older.
Yes.
It's about to sound older when I get to the next thing.
I think I knew how to do that at one time in my life, but I have long forgotten.
I think it was something I was taught in school. Maybe we had bowling in gym.
Okay.
And had to learn how to keep score. And
sure.
Would that be possible?
Oh, can you imagine the outrage today? I signed my kid up for phys ed. What do you mean there's math? I don't need him getting math in phys ed class. Let me introduce you to my wife, Karen. Sorry.
Rank the order of outrage if in school today you're finding out that your son or daughter had to learn how to keep score in bowling. Like, what's the order of outrage? Is it, why are we bowling?
Who bowls?
One? What's one? Is it, don't you have one of those scoreboards, like every bowling alley that's got two people in it, but they still have like 20 lanes of scoreboards and you're writing it down?
Yeah.
I mean, just in case of an emergency, you might need to know.
Yeah, there were dark times, people. We had to do that longhand. There was no technology to help you.
I would somehow need to get to 263 and strike out. That you could bowl the 293.
I don't get to
263.
I don't know if there's any number that's impossible to bowl.
Right.
Really, but I don't know. I don't know. I've never been
0-1.
You know, it's one of my greatest failings as a son is that I never really took to bowling. I think my dad at some point will finally admit to me that he's very disappointed that I didn't like bowling.
You could bowl a 10
because he loves bowling. That my parents are bowling tomorrow. They're 92 and 91 years old.
Listen to this.
And they will be
NFL
bowling tomorrow.
What time?
My mom's got like plastic parts in her now. She's bowling.
I might want to go.
My dad tomorrow. Like that is happening.
Can you watch? Do they have that? Can you watch?
I don't think it's.
I might want to go. Will you go with me to watch your parents bowl?
Live barn bowling.
What
Maybe
time?
We can stream it.
Live barn bowling. Should we start over? What time is this bowling? I think I'm into it. I want to watch some bowling.
I think early afternoon. I want to say like
it's tight.
Yeah, so
could be tight.
I don't know.
The show has sounded older, and it's about to sound even older. And I mentioned that the Bills have Matt Prater in.
Right. Yeah.
41.
Okay, so he didn't kick in a Super Bowl against the Bills. Okay, it just seems like he's been in the league for a century to me.
It's almost the whole of this century: Atlanta, Denver, Detroit, Arizona. He might have kicked for Denver on the team that beat Carolina. Or maybe he was in Detroit by then. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
No.
Unless we want to debate 803-0550, does his lack of Super Bowl experience pose a problem for the Bills if they need to sign him, which they already did.
Practice squad, right. But
it doesn't bode well for Bass.
No, definitely doesn't.
None of this does. The whole summer.
Yeah.
What? I mean, like, weeks went by and he wasn't even practicing. pelvic discomfort.
And then he kicked in the final preseason game, missed a short one, I think, at the end, if I remember correctly. But whatever. Like, he kicked. They used him in the game. And I don't know, has he kicked since? I mean, I was away right after that. I was on vacation after that game. But here, it's game week. It's Thursday, and they've got another kicker as a backup plan.
Yeah.
So I would say that definitely doesn't bode well for Bass, at least in the short term. But it's been all summer, like you just said. So it's already been a long-term thing.
We'll see what Sal thinks. Yeah, they might. I mean, the last takeaway was, well, he's not 100%. We know that, but no one else is here. And we had the kicker that was brought in last minute for the Giants game. And then Ray Davis is kicking an extra point. And for what it's worth, the other guy,
Cade Davis?
Zach, somebody kicked up, you punted in one game, but that's not relevant to Bass.
The tight end, yeah, Davidson.
Davidson.
Yeah.
So, like, right, the first thing was, well, they brought in a kicker, but then he left. And then they didn't have anybody here last week when the roster shuffle was all happening, but you wouldn't need to do that.
Right, but I
brought in guys.
I felt like the guy being here and then leaving was an indication that Bass was, like, that they felt good about Bass.
But they brought in, like, is it 2 weeks ago now? It's post-Tampa. It'd be last week.
Yep, guys to work out.
They brought in veterans, not Caden Davis, whoever that was against the Giants. Like, Pinheiro, was Prater one of them, maybe? Like, they brought in three long-time NFL kickers. Like, okay, well, at least they're pondering the possibility. I don't know what you do with Bass if he's not right. Like, could he go to IR? If he goes to IR, unless they do something else too, like, that's it. They could move that other guy, Grable. Can they, though? I don't even know if they can do that. Like, I think you might be looking at him as a roster spot and inactive, or he's okay. I mean, there's that.
Yeah.
But what do you do with
them? Well, there is IR that you can, that's not season ending.
But they have two spots for that, and they're both used.
They're both already used, okay.
Yeah, they did it at the cuts, Hairston.
Oh, right, right.
And Grable.
Grable, yeah. Okay.
And I thought, we talked about Trey White for this. Like, if Trey White, they thought, would need a month probably, they would have put him on that list. I guess I might want to have a little bit more information on what Grable is for them. But, you know, you have two spots to use. He's somebody that fits into the category based on his injury, so you use it. Could they? I think they could release him if they wanted. If they wanted Bass for this, but they might just—I don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know what it is. Like, he's been pretty much unavailable all summer.
But if they were to choose to do that, they haven't done anything. There could be roster logistics that are going to happen here over the next 48 hours. But if they don't do anything, then they'd be going into the opener with two guys if White can't play. And we don't know that yet, but they haven't done anything with him as far as the roster goes. We know that that was the good sign when the cuts happened. Oh, okay, well, he's going to be shorter than 4 weeks, so they're not going to do anything with him. But he can't play. Like, that's two guys that you're carrying on the roster that already, Bass and White, that would be unavailable. That's a tough way to start the year.
The Ravens have moved in the last couple of days from a 1 or 1.5 point underdog to a 1 or 1.5 point favorite. 2 to 3 point move toward Baltimore. It's a pretty significant move. We'll talk to Joe Ostrowski today in about 20 minutes. That'll be great. Get his informed opinion on this. That's a pretty significant move for this late. And it's not a quarterback injury. Is it Trey White? Is that what maybe, is that enough? Like, how much does your uncertainty, your feeling about the Bills secondary affect how you see the game? Like, two very even teams, playoff game, you know, we know all this. Bills at home, 1.5 point dogs at MGM. They're a 4 point underdog on the road for this game if this game were in Baltimore? That seems hefty.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know what's happening, because the timing of the move is becoming more and more certain that the Ravens, I shouldn't say more and more certain, it's just looking more like, it's almost the same thing, just a little less definitive. Like, Likely and Ricard are not going to play. And those are guys that are on the field a lot for Baltimore. And
well, we knew Likely.
Sure, but That's right. Ricard is becoming more definitive as the week is going on. And I feel like a lot of I watched a clip of Warren Sharp talking about this from last night. Well, I saw the clip last night. I don't know when he recorded it. Doesn't matter. Just talking about the two tight ends, heavy packages, fullbacks. Like, that's a lot of what Baltimore likes to do, and they're effective passing out of that too. And not having Likely and Ricard really is that's a big chunk of what they are on offense. And they were not very efficient using three receiver sets last year. One of the least efficient teams, I think, in the league is what Warren said. Bottom third, at least. And so, if anything, that would be... I think that's a bigger deal than not having Trey White. And so I'm a little, I'm a little perplexed about what's causing the movement. I mean, I know how, I think I know to some extent how it works. If money's pouring in on one side, that'll move the line. And so maybe people are just going crazy on Baltimore.
Well, I don't know. Sorry for this in advance to get a little technical. Like that it logically would do it, but the book is trying to, limit its liability, right? So if whatever the factors are that are basically the same thing, but Baltimore is becoming more popular, right, and they've already taken 70% of the bets or something. I think you can find out, by the way, how that breaks down, like team versus team. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think you would – this isn't really a fair question. I was going to ask something like, would you feel differently about this game if you were like a Lions fan than you do? Like, what does it smell like? Ross said Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, whatever. Would it be motivation or just whatever extra might be within the team that lost this game in the playoffs? Still, they have to come here. I mean, shouldn't be easy. I don't know. I mean, they're both good. It's just it's an interesting development, this line movement.
Yeah.
Whether that's White. It's so weird that, Trey White, who was on the Ravens the last time these teams met last January, is somebody whose injury could be really meaningful here. I mean, I don't know. Isn't it possible the Bills are just as good behind him?
Yes. Yes, it's just unknown.
Maybe that's not real good, but...
Right. So, yeah, I'd be surprised if that's what's causing it, but something must be.
Something is.
So, yeah, I mean, here we sit. But I do think, thinking moving away from the gambling aspect of it, if that's okay, in the matchup itself, I do think that watching this thing I referenced from Warren Sharp made an impression on me. I think that they're down, it's more than, say, the Bills like to use Alec Anderson as a sixth lineman, and that was 8% or something of their offensive snaps last year, which was very high within the league, but 8% is not a lot of your offense. Ricard and Likely is that's closer to half of their offensive plays. Those guys are, one or both are on the field. So that's a big, now they've known all, they've probably been preparing for no Likely and probably even Ricard to an extent, although it's just coming to be known this week for sure that it looks unlikely he'll play. So the Ravens are prepared for that, but it's still their calling card is that. I mean, their advantage on a lot of teams is especially Ricard. I got a 300-pound guy in the backfield playing as a fullback. He's running pass patterns, but mostly he's just mauling people that get in his way. That's a big part of their identity and who they are. So I think they may not have their best fastball coming into this game. I would even say it's almost a lock that they won't. That doesn't mean they can't find other ways. I mean, they had a pretty good time, whatever formations they were using, getting passes downfield against the Bills in that playoff game.
Yes.
And that's what's haunting me thinking about it. Like a lot of people, I think, I even thought about Derrick Henry one time this whole week.
That's so interesting.
Leading up to the game. We were obsessed with him going into the playoff game because of what happened in the regular season matchup and just the year he'd had. And it was really Jackson down the field that was the thing that they did, I think, best in that game in the playoffs. But still, I just think not having that personnel flexibility, I think, is a big deal for them.
You ever see, remember the Henry touchdown against the Bills in the Sunday night game right away? It was 80 yards or 75, whatever that was. Remember that play?
Yep.
You ever see the highlight of that play from the end zone? Ricard is the play.
I don't know. Yeah.
I remember, like, I'm not looking at it now, but it was watch Baltimore block this play. It's like their first play, right? In that game.
It was the first play of a game.
And, like, it's, you know, the seal here and the seal here and then up the alley. Like, Henry just burst through and Ricard just eliminates somebody and he's gone. Like, he's not even
right.
He's gone at 15 yards, if not 10, on that play. It's over.
Right.
And Ricard is big on that play.
Yeah, that's the advantage of having that. Like, you know, a typical fullback, you know, a 250-pound guy is more of a fair fight with a linebacker, say. But you get Ricard on, especially in today's game, there aren't that many linebackers that are that big anymore. It's a smaller, faster position now. It's almost, I wonder if strong safety and linebacker, like, look as similar as they've ever looked in the sport right now. Like, I feel like a lot of linebackers are strong safety size from, like, the 80s. You know, like, that's where we're at. And so you get Ricard in, you know, to handle that matchup, and he's plowing somebody into the ground, probably.
You know, we haven't spent that much time this summer, I would say, on Josh Allen and running. Like, that is kind of a evergreen topic. All right, here's his total from last year. Here's what Brandon Bean said. Here's what Sean McDermott said. What's this year? Haven't really thought about that very much. I guess as I say that, I don't have now or haven't had really this offseason any reason to think anything will change there. You know, he's still not 30. We know how good he is. Like, this first game is not a soft open. This is like a real test, if that matters. We had the Bean comment from 2 years ago, sort of like pace yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know if you pace yourself when you start with the Ravens. But anyway, I'm not really thinking about that changing. I'm not really thinking about anything changing for the Bills on offense as it happens.
I'm also not. I think you mentioned Bean's comments from a couple of years ago. That's what usually kickstarted that conversation in this room, at least in my recollection. Not to say we wouldn't have ever independently thought to bring it up ourselves, but it was usually predicated on something that they might have said about it. And I don't know if maybe they have. It's a long summer. There's lots of times these people are talking, and I'm not, you know, I don't have a notebook filled with all the quotes, but I don't remember it being a subject. Like, it feels like almost everyone who covers the team and the team themselves is like, you're not going to ask us about this. We're not volunteering any information about our plans for Josh Allen running.
Yeah, the less you say, the better.
Right.
By the way, thanks to the people, the listeners who tweeted at me and us about the IR rule. So it's only the two players is only on cutdown day. And you can do this 8 times.
Okay, so they got a lot of flexibility.
They could put Bass. I have no idea if they're planning to do this or even discussing it, but it sort of feels like they might be because he's just been unavailable and the season starts Sunday and now they're signing Matt Prater. So they could do the 4-week option with Bass, I think. Maybe now other people will tell me different because I'm not positive. So I brought up the Allen point. We're talking about the Ravens. And I brought up the Allen point because I wonder what this point looks and feels like from Baltimore's perspective. Like, Lamar Jackson is this incredible runner, but it's not always that he's really, like, into it. You know, it's just what he doesn't do. The big difference between Jackson and Allen in terms of their usage is that Jackson does not carry the ball inside the 10-yard line or inside the 5. Like, that, they have Henry for that. The Bills have James Cook, too, but Allen still does tons of that. So you don't get Jackson, or you haven't before, gotten Lamar Jackson running, you know, around the goal line. And I've thought about the Ravens most of his career, not when he was a rookie, but for the most part, like in the last 3 years, that he should run more. Because much the way I feel about Allen and how, like, this is the cheat code. 3rd and 4, how can you lose? If Josh Allen is your quarterback on 3rd and 4, how can you lose? You know, maybe you get, if you're going to run him twice, how could you lose? They don't always do that, but you know.
Right.
What should their success rate be with him
really
as their quarterback on 3rd and medium?
Without a penalty, really high.
Really high. And, you know, the Ravens, I don't have numbers, but lots of times I watch them and he chooses not to run. I choose not to run. For you Seinfeld experts. Hi, Joe. No, he just like, I think there was a point at which he'd won the MVP and it was like, all right, collective effort. We're going to announce you as more than just the best running quarterback of all time. We're going to, you know, we're going to sit in the pocket. We're going to win our 11 games blindfolded, and we're going to establish that. And I wonder if that's still, like, how much of a thing that still might be with him. This is the opener, and it's a huge game for them, too. Yesterday, we debated, like, who has more to lose. Baltimore has a much tougher schedule than the Bills do. They're on the road here. There could be some desperation. And if Henry has the same game as he had in the playoffs, with something like 17 for 80 or 17 for 90, it was fine. But he didn't break anything. He didn't wear them out.
Right.
I think, you know, if I'm them, I don't have Likely or Ricard. Maybe some, you know, more of the RPO stuff, more of the bootleg stuff might be in the offing for the Ravens. They will have Zay Flowers, who did not play against the Bills in the playoffs. So maybe they, I don't know, no Trey White, no Hairston, of course. Who knows at safety? Maybe they just spread it out.
Yep.
That's what I would do. And then I've got Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson because I've got seven in the box, and I'm just going to do that. Not to make it sound too easy. Well, cannot wait. Sunday night, 8:20, or if you just listen to NBC, 7. Because all they ever do is tell you, just put it on the pile
just get
of
here
things
in time
that are just
the,
not honest anymore. They always tell you that tonight, the game's at 7. No, it's not. It's at 8:20. But they tell you 7 o'clock, NBC, Peacock, so you can listen to Jack Collinsworth for an hour and 20 or whatever that amounts to. So it's not 7, but that's when coverage starts tonight. Maybe I should just calm down about that, not get as bent about it. I hate it. Why can't it just be? It was always pregame at X, game at Y.
It really is.
Now we just we don't need to be honest with you, so we're not gonna just pretend that the game is at 7. See, you got me going on that. I'm excited for tonight. I'm excited for Joe Ostrowski being back. Yet another signpost that it is football season. Joe from Bet Sweats, 3:30 on Thursdays. Sam Paniadovich, his co-host on that show, 3:30 on Fridays. So tomorrow, as we go through the year. Sam has been on with us year-round. The Bills are his Super Bowl pick, but they're not Joe's. Just embrace yourself.
That's it.
They're not Joe's Super Bowl pick.
I want a divorce. I don't want to continue this partnership.
Well, stay tuned and find out if Bulldog leaves. Maybe I'll have to mention fantasy. Maybe that'll be the breaking point. I don't know. Wow. He couldn't get into his app. That was a whole ordeal.
This is a real reason I could leave, and I might go for it.
Wow. We will not tell Joe this. Joe Ostrowski next. Sal Capaccio at 4. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. It is opening night in the NFL. Dallas and Philadelphia. Can't wait. This is WGR.
I think the first and foremost thing, just trying to do too much and trying to play hero ball maybe too early. Over the years, just finding out, like, let the game come to us, especially myself. Throwing checkdowns early and moving the sticks and just worrying about, you know, the play at hand and not the entire drive. So, yeah, just looking forward to going out there and execute with my teammates.
Josh Allen, he'll be the player on the field Sunday night with the gold NFL shield under his neck. That's how you'll know it's him. Which one is Allen? Honey, these binoculars aren't working. Which one is? Oh, there it is, the gold shield. That's him. That's him. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson has the white. Sorry, not this year. You have the white shield. Mm-hmm. But for MVP, Allen gets gold. Welcome back. What a night. Eagles and Cowboys to kick off the NFL season at 8:20. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, and it is on. Joe Ostrowski with us on the Wester Hotline. Joe, how excited are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm thrilled, man.
Let's go.
It's awesome. I said goodbye to the family for the next 5 months. I'll be in the basement. It's finally here. Get this, saying the same things. The other day, our producer said, I'm not telling you guys to disagree, but, like, you're agreeing on a lot. I'm like, yeah, we've been talking about the same stuff for 3 months. Let's get it going already.
Yeah. What has been our, like, biggest point that we've argued about? You know what it might be?
Vanilla ice
cream. It always could be food, but I think it might be that Bulldog holds the Bills' offense more in contempt for how last season ended than I do. Because I look at these Chiefs games in the playoffs, Joe. I mean, not to sort of move the goalposts by including previous years. I guess maybe I'm guilty of that. But, I mean, they have never intercepted Mahomes. They couldn't stop him, and Kansas City had a brutal year. And when we talk about this, you usually come back at me with how the game ended.
They've had the ball around midfield or better, around the two-minute warning or a little less, with a chance to score and take the lead and maybe even, you know, win the game if they play the clock right. And both years, they didn't come through. In the first time around 2 years ago, they missed a field goal that would have tied the game. But still, they had an opportunity. And I sort of feel like, even though offense has not been as explosive the last couple of years after that early when Mahomes showed up and then Allen hit in 20 and it just seemed like, oh my God, the sport is going to be, they're going to need new scoreboards to try to keep up. Even though it's not that league right now, I still feel like if I'm any team and I'm playing Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and they've got the ball at my 35 with a minute 20 left and need a touchdown to beat me, I'm dead. Yeah. And I sort of feel like Allen should be held to that same standard. That's all. It's just a little bit of a pushback. I mean, I'm certainly not down on him at all, but he has not come through in spots a couple of times where I think you would expect Mahomes to. And now that can shine the light on the Bills' defense too, right? I mean, because part of my expecting the Bills to not come through there and stop Mahomes in that situation is, you know, because I've seen it happen. But I don't know, I think the best quarterback should come through in that situation for his team a couple times.
Yeah, and maybe you understand on some level, okay, it's unfair, but for it to happen, to beat that guy on the other side, this is our world. We're in the AFC. We've got at least three, maybe even more, elite quarterbacks at the very top, and you're going to have to beat a couple of them if we want to get a championship in this era. Like, yeah, we're blessed with a great quarterback, an all-time quarterback probably, but to get to that level, this is what you have to do. You have to match that guy. And, yeah, I could see why some would view it as being maybe a little unfair, but, I mean, do you want a championship or not?
That's what it takes.
Right.
Joe Ostrowski, co-host with Sam Paniadovich, Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network, weekday mornings 9 to noon on the Bet 1520 and on the Odyssey app. If I am correct from having watched your show, you know, regularly lately, you and Sam are both inclined to have a team playing Sunday night in the Super Bowl this year, and not a team playing on Friday night.
Oh, as far
Bills and Ravens.
Yeah, I'm not willing to sit here and say that the Chiefs are not going to be in the Super Bowl.
Okay, I thought you had Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, I would lean that way. Honestly, I haven't even taken a hard stance.
Okay.
I found myself earlier this week, and it's probably a losing proposition, just trying to figure out which teams can take down those top three, which all seem to improve in the offseason. And that's part of what's so challenging here.
Yeah.
If you're going to take a stand on one of them, hey, you know what? These other two, they got pretty good in this area or that area. I've been trying to figure out, and I don't love to do this, but, okay, which defenses can take down these quarterbacks? Should we just limit it to the top three, or are we going to expand this conversation? And Denver has been super popular. Maybe not on the level of those teams, but do they have that ability to be the same defense they were? Can Bo Nix take another step? Another team that seemed to improve in the offseason. A year ago, we have this talk, and everybody's talking about the Texans. And now they seem to be forgotten about completely. Mm-hmm. Is the quarterback play going to be closer to what we saw last year or a couple of years ago? I mean, keep in mind, last year, all those receivers end up going down. I've been thinking a lot about that. Baltimore has been very popular with a lot of respected minds in the sports betting space. And I think just the football space in general. And I get it, but I also look at it and say, I don't know that they're that much better than everybody else. I don't see why there is some separation between them and Kansas City, tiny separation between themselves and the Bills. Just look at the point spread this week. If I were to take a stance right now on the AFC side, I would probably go Kansas City.
You could wait. You could wait until Friday night, and if they lose, do it. 2 years ago, they lost the opener.
That would be a really good time. Right.
You could try that.
Yeah, the Chiefs have been challenging to me all offseason, Joe, because on one hand, and really you could say this about any of the big three in the AFC, the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Ravens, like Is it going to last forever? Like, is one of these teams going to have... Baltimore's had a couple of dips. There was an injury year there where they were kind of messed up here during Jackson's career. But the Bills and the Chiefs have just been, you know, upward and then plateauing mostly here for five or six seasons. So on one hand, I think it can't last forever. Come on, Chiefs, right? How about just an 11-6 season for crying out loud already? And then on the other hand, I think with as bad as their offense has performed for a couple of years running now, there's like a 5,000-yard, 50-touchdown MVP screw all of you Mahomes season out there on the horizon somewhere, and maybe this is it.
That's my concern. And I know we have a suspension dealing with early in the season. Okay, who cares? Whatever. We know that they're going to be fine getting through that patch. And then in the middle of the year, they might have three scary weapons, something that they have not had recently. Yeah, I'm not willing to say, that Mahomes that we've witnessed in the past, that guy's not coming back. He can't. And like you alluded to, they've been winning in the playoffs due to that defense, and I don't think that's going away. And you have that brain power, and they improved with the coaching, and they improved as well. I get it with Baltimore. And in Baltimore, they're saying the exact same thing. If not now, when? And it's not just a Lamar conversation. And then they go out and they really add to that secondary. If Jair Alexander's ever going to stay healthy, they just hang out in the draft and they get the best safety in the draft. Defensive coordinator a year ago at this time was a concern. Now it's not anymore at all because we saw what Zach Orr could do. And the offensive coordinator that some people flirted with to become a head coach, he returns as well. So it just feels like everything went Baltimore's way in the offseason. So I think that's why a lot of people are there. And myself, hand up, maybe they've been burned by the Bills, because I do feel like I've been burned by the Bills.
The Ravens have a slew of win the offseason banners and even win the regular season banners, yeah. But can they win the postseason for once? Joe Ostrowski with us here on WGR. So you mentioned the line being pretty much airtight for this game Sunday night, but it has moved toward the Ravens here recently from plus one or 1.5 to minus one or 1.5. I wonder if it's the questions about the Bills at corner and or even safety that have accounted for this. I can't think of anything else that would have, other than, you know, some sports book related, like a Bulldog said earlier, a big bet or something that might have accounted for that. But sure. What's your read on it? If this game's in Baltimore, or like the Bills a 4-point underdog, I'd have a tough time believing that.
Yeah, I would too. My first reaction when seeing this earlier in the offseason, I'm like, oh, really? Okay, so Buffalo opened the favorite, and everything has been leaning towards Baltimore. Buffalo at home as an underdog, I know they're barely an underdog. It's basically a pick 'em with this line. But still, I would just say automatically, I'm going to take Buffalo at home. It's a lot of people that are in on Baltimore this season. And they're looking at the offseason, and they think, okay, maybe this is Baltimore's time. A lot of time in week one, people will push matchups to the side a little bit, and they're going with confirmation bias. Like, look, I believe in Baltimore this year. That means they're winning. They're going mm-hmm. to win and cover in week number one. Well, that's not really how this works. You know, the Super Bowl winner, as you just mentioned, could end up losing outright in week number one. So I think that's part of it. And then also, you go back to that playoff game, the Ravens won the box score, except for one category, the turnover margin. In yards per play, total yards, all that, everything was heavy in that way and to the Ravens side. And I think part of that is on people's minds as well. But the reality is it's certainly notable, and it is in my world, Baltimore being a road favorite at Buffalo, and there's movement that way. However, I wouldn't say that it doesn't really matter, because until you get to 2 and 3, I mean, it's basically a conversation of who's going to win the game. When you're sitting around 1 and 0, movement around those numbers don't mean a ton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are we still working off a premise where home field is 3? I feel like that's maybe taken some hits, but I'd like an update from you as we're starting a new season here.
Definitely not. three is a no-go for anybody, and I'm talking about like you guys. You guys have one of the biggest home fields in the NFL, and that's not viewed as three. The high ones were closer to two. I mean, there are some out there. I'd have to think a little bit about it, but there are some that are not far off of neutral, guys.
Yeah.
Like, maybe one. Like, you look at the Raiders, teams that travel, like where I'm at, Chicago, if they're playing out there, or Bills fans are going out west or something like that, and it ends up being close to split. Or yep. You have some places where it just doesn't get all that loud. And the home field is like maybe one, maybe a point now in some spots. So that's always interesting. You know, back in the day, Seattle used to be massive. There are certain spots, Kansas City, of course, Arrowhead, bigger home field. But even the biggest home fields, Bulldog, are not at three anymore.
Yeah. The last time the Bills were in Seattle, I remember their broadcast crew, I think we even talked to one of them, talking about how they can't believe how many visiting fans are in the seats in Seattle now. I think that's just mm-hmm. something that's happened post-COVID, maybe even before COVID. I mean, just the availability of tickets. Like, fans, if you want to pay, you can get it to any game you want. So, like, more visiting fans travel probably more than ever now.
Yep.
With Joe Ostrowski, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. The opener tonight, Dallas at Philadelphia. I don't know if it's best for the league, if it was perfect how this fell to have the biggest spread of the week be in this game. Great rivalry. It's Dallas. They kind of own these Sunday night games. This is a Thursday, of course, but still. But, of course, Micah Parsons being traded has added to that. Philadelphia up to 8.5. I think I heard you say this morning that you're not sure you want to give that many points here, that maybe Dallas a little bit. What's your lean?
Yeah, I'm not going to make a play on the side, picking a side, to be quite honest. But one thing that I noticed, yeah, the Micah Parsons movement, that's, wow, huge. Before that trade all summer, this is 6 and I'd say 7 at most spots, but it was 6.5 before the deal, and now we're 8, 8.5. I think we all know that Parsons is not worth that much to the point spread. But all day, the over is taking money. I get it. I understand where they're coming from, but now I'm looking, BetMGM is 48.5. Earlier this morning, it was 47.5. It was 46.5, 47 throughout much of the offseason. So that is certainly taken a hit. And I think a big part of that is a healthy Dak. We haven't seen him in quite some time. He gets another weapon in Pickens. People are curious about how that's going to go. If it's a game where it's a runaway with Philadelphia, Dallas is still probably going to get their points, garbage time points, in the second half of the game. You think of all the explosive offensive weapons for both teams in this game. So I think that contributes to why we're getting a high-ish total here. And, you know, that Eagles defense, Vic Fangio, phenomenal job a year ago, but it's what happens when you win the Super Bowl. You end up losing a lot of depth. A lot of guys go in free agency. You lose Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, a number of guys in the secondary. So when it comes to Philadelphia, they'll obviously be fine tonight. But over the course of the season, guys, once injuries start to pile up, I do worry about that defense in the second half of the season. But as far as tonight, I think a higher scoring game, but plenty of times we've seen teams come out to slow starts the last few years. Dak, he hasn't thrown for 200 yards in any of his last three season openers. But I was looking at Ferguson. He was 33.5 for the yardage there. So I think that would be an interesting look going over the middle of the field on the Philly defense.
I think I read that this is the biggest underdog ever for Prescott in a division game. 8.5 points in his career.
A lot.
So, I mean,
it's a lot. You think back to some of these other Thursday night openers, guys. Like, we've seen point spreads similar to this. I want to say Tampa Bay-Dallas was very close to that, and Tampa Bay just got by.
Yep.
Dallas end up covering that. A couple years ago, Detroit pulls off the upset. Weren't they around touchdown favorites in that one, Casey?
Probably.
I remember talking about whether Detroit even belonged in the game.
Yeah.
And then they went in and won it.
Kelsey missed. He was a healthy, or not a healthy scratch, but he was inactive for that game. Mm-hmm. A couple of your favorite futures, Joe, before you go. There's still time for us to place these.
Yeah, certainly. As far as I'll just run through some. As far as divisions, I found myself to really like the Jaguars. They're better than 3-1. to win the AFC South, if Cohen can pull that off. I'm not with everybody on the Bucks. I could be very wrong on this. It seems like it's a consensus that the Bucks are great and they're going to run away with it. Don't worry about losing Liam Cohen. I'm not there. But I have been wrong on the Atlanta Falcons many times before. I think there's upside there with Penix, and maybe they finally got a pass rusher out of the recent draft. Mike, I was thinking about you the other day with this Packers move. Is it finally the year for Love for MVP?
It's the kind of bet I like. You know, it's not he's not a favorite. I would have liked it more before Parsons, but my thing on Green Bay, is this the year where they finally push it? Like they don't really have to. They play slow and their defense is good and it's Josh Jacobs. Like, they're paying Love like he should be somebody that can carry them. Now they've drafted a receiver in round one. Yeah, I like it. And what a way to start. Home to the Lions. I mean, it's kind of perfect for them to announce themselves if they're capable of it. I want to see them, though, just sort of turn up the pass rate over expected this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys are seeing all the predictions. Like, ever since the Parsons move, they're the trendy pick to go to the Super Bowl and represent the NFC. And I think that's just a product of people don't know what to do with the NFC, because we can poke holes in just about every team up top. And, you know, I've been one of those people. I can't get there with Green Bay, but I understand if that becomes an over-the-top move for some people. Offensive player of the year, I mentioned liking the Jaguars. And Brian Thomas, this could be a breakout year for him. 35-1 for him for offensive player of the year. You know, coach of the year. Sure, I can make a case for maybe Pete Carroll if the Raiders have a good season. The same thing for, you know, Liam Cohen, of course. But if I'm going down the board, I think the Giants are going to be okay. That pass rush is scary.
Yeah.
They add more weapons on offense, like 30-1 for Daboll. We know he's won this award and he could get that New York bump. Like, he's a guy that certainly stands out. And speaking of the Giants, if Dart gets an opportunity sometime soon.
Oh, baby.
Maybe he ends up being your offensive rookie of the year.
Oh, baby. I listened to your conversation about coach of the year this morning. I wanted to throw Sean Payton's name in, too, because, like, if they have players, and if they can beat Kansas City in that division, that could be enough. Even though they were in the playoffs last year, that could be enough for him. He's obviously got the reputation, 14-1 thereabouts, so I'd like him for that. But here in New York, only so much we can do. I know you mentioned us this morning. I feel bad for the guys in Buffalo. I was texting with Sam. I just went to Louisville and across into Indiana, like, oh, let's go. And just threw money at Kittle, offensive player of the year, which is probably madness.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Give me a story, at least.
We both like to lose bets, Joe.
That's our favorite thing to do, is drive 500 miles and lose bets. That's my passion.
Woo!
Great to have you back on, Joe. Good luck tonight and this season. We'll talk next week.
Of course. Looking forward to it, guys. Thank you.
Joe Ostrowski, the host of Bet Sweats with Sam Panayotovich, who will be on with us tomorrow. Check out their show weekday mornings 9 to noon on the Bet 1520 here in Buffalo or on the Odyssey app. I love to lose bets. You had it rolling for a minute yesterday on baseball, but then
for a minute
the Blue Jays bats showed up.
For a minute, yeah, I did. I was doing pretty good.
Like, they're raking again.
I had a couple games that were home, and then the early start, and then just Red Sox unraveled. Yeah,
we'll get Sal's interpretation of the injury developments with the Bills. Benford back to full. No Tyler Bass, and still no Trey White. Talk about Sunday night's game, of course, as well. That's next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.